Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, episode 1, 2, 3, the sequential episode of Pancakes and Power Slams. I think this is the only time that we have had a sequential episode. I guess 0, 1, 2 would have counted, but this is the sequence episode. That is the theme for today. I don't know exactly what that means, but as far as the show is concerned, but nevertheless, it's episode 1, 2, 3. And last weekend, I just felt the need to really get some things off my chest via the Bleacher Report, and I think that it was well worth it. I'm so glad that I did it, and we're going to talk about that later. Has to deal with a former WWE wrestler named CM Punk, or as Paul Heyman would say, CM Punk. And so, yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. I'm gonna address the CM Punk marks. Throughout the past 122, now 123 episodes, I've said week after week, I was just waiting for the right time to spend some time. I've talked about it before, but I've just been waiting for the right opportunity to address the CM Punk marks, and now is the time. Today is the day the CM Punk marks will be addressed. And ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be very, very interesting. It's an article that I wrote on Bleacher Report last weekend, and I must say that I was the heel. I was the biggest heel of the weekend when it came to media. So I know that the chat room's loading up right now. I know that we're going to have some moderators to make sure that everything's going smoothly, and everybody that calls in is going to make sure to get screened. It's going to be a very, very interesting show, and I'm excited about it. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. I do respect people's opinion. See, here's the thing. When it comes to journalism, and I've been a journalist long enough to understand that people, they hold on so tight to a personality. They hold on so tight to a character that they don't understand that this is all just just kayfabe, I guess you can say. I guess that's the best way to describe it. It's all kayfabe, and when it gets down to it, it's not this is people's lives, true, but at the same time, you know, people have lives outside of professional wrestling. So, that is the opposite of what I want to address. There's, you know, you have that point that's true, and then you get to the point where someone just disrespects the business, and we shall get there and addressing that soon here on the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Of course, we're going to have some fun, as always. We are here on the Tuesday night, as Derek would say, the Tuesday Night Titans, or the new Tuesday Night Titans. It's going to be great fun, and we're going to have a good time. Trivia question for the day to start off with: what year did Randy Orton win his first world championship in the WWE? What year did Randy Orton win his first world championship in the WWE? Episode number 123. It's going to be a fun episode here at Pancakes and Power Slams. I want to first, because I don't know if I'll have enough time to do it by the end of the show, I definitely want to give a shout-out to all of the companies that I write for. Of course, you have Bleacher Report. Of course, you have WrestlingInc.com, WeAreWrestling.net, What Culture. I'm really happy that I really get to express my writing through many media outlets, and so that's very exciting. Speaking of exciting, what's even incredibly exciting is the really rush of Facebook followers that I've gotten within the past week. So keep it up. That's continuing to grow, and thank you so much for the following. I throughout the couple years, I didn't really push the Facebook site as much as I should. But thankfully, the support that has came through with the show and through the plugs and through the media outlets, it's definitely given me an opportunity to have the Facebook outlet and to plug the show and plug Crave Wrestling and Pancakes and Power Slams through Facebook. So without further ado, I have Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, to kind of balance the night out, because I know that CM Punk marts are chomping at the bits to try to lynch me, but I am very, very prepared, and I have owned some CM Punk marks throughout the weekend, and I'm excited to keep it going. So it's going to be fun, Derek.
It's going to be fun. Number 1, 2, 3, Pancakes and Power Slams. Yeah, CM Punk, he did what he wanted to do. Judge not, lest ye be judged. But, hey, he kind of left a lot of fans hanging. But anyway, other than that, I'm not going to delve too much into it until the opinion's needed. But this is going to be an awesome show. Awesome episode. We're just growing and growing and growing. Of course, Facebook. Facebook followers out there. Pancakes and Power Slams. We're going to make that page so much more better. We've got interns on it. We've got our admin staff. Let's keep this thing going. What do you say? Of course you say so. So anyway, this is Pancakes and Power Slams, the new Tuesday Night Titans. The new TNN.
The new Tuesday Night Titans.
Got this. Absolutely. We've got this down. This is where you need to be Tuesday night, 11 o'clock, 347-884-8452. We've got the chat room up now, Twitter. However you like to voice your opinion on wrestling, this is Tuesday night, the place to do it. Let's get it all.
Absolutely. And the chat room is correct. Good job to 2004. What pay-per-view? Keep it going, chat room. What pay-per-view was the – did he win – the World Heavyweight Championship, and we shall get to Raw. Let's start off Raw with Of course, you know what was going to happen. You have the beginning of Raw being the Authority, get an in-ring promo with the Authority, and because of just the show, of course, we had Name That Tune prepared, but we're just going to have push everything back. We're going to try to get to SmackDown. We're going to try to get to Destination X, but of course, we're going to handle Raw. I definitely want to address Destination X if I have some time and try to squeeze some time in there. But Flavor of the Week, of course, this week I'm going to address the CM Punk marks and the controversial article that I wrote last weekend. No matter if you liked it or hated it, thank you for reading and thank you for commenting. The article has, I think it's tipped over 105,000 reads so far, and I don't remember the comments. The comments is around, it's nearly 1,000 at this point. So around my record as far as article numbers are concerned, as far as reads, I've gotten over 100,000 a few times. But I think this may be a record. This may be a record. But I know for sure in the comments department, the comments department has blew this out of the water, blew my record out of the water. I've gotten 5, 7, but definitely 900 to 1,000 comments for one article is amazing. And a lot of them were pretty interesting, and I'm very excited to talk about it, so we'll get to that shortly. All right, so on Raw we have the Authority, and by the way, great job, SummerSlam is the correct answer. The Authority cuts an in-ring promo, and Triple H books a beat-the-clock challenge for stipulation choice between Ambrose and Alberto Del Rio, and then Seth Rollins and RVD. And then Randy Orton grabs the mic and starts talking about his title shot, and he starts taunting Roman Reigns. And, of course, Roman Reigns had to come out. He appears in the crowd, and he cuts a promo, which, by the way, his promo cutting is getting a lot better. And I say this often, but it's starting to become more and more true because he's just getting a lot better with his cadences and his tones and his nuances. Kudos to Roman Reigns. I think he's doing a great job just really developing his character. The only thing is I really, really want the WWE to give his character some time. I've said this many times before. Don't do the too much too soon treatment. And at this time, the WWE needs to really slow down. I think they really need to slow down. I like this feud with Randy Orton. But please, please, please do not put him in a world title feud at all this year. I know he was in the four-way at Battleground, but that was just a throwaway match to set up for SummerSlam. But he should not be in the title feud whatsoever the entire year. He should win the Royal Rumble, and he should go against John Cena at WrestleMania. That's what I'd like to see.
That's what everybody would like to see, but honestly, in the WWE, that probably just isn't going to happen with the fast pace, with everything that's happening. And with Reigns going against Kane, I mean, in a way, that is kind of slowing down his character, because Kane is not anybody to really wrestle against anymore. I mean, he is an absolute jobber. We've been saying that for so long. That's a shame. Focus back to Reigns. I mean, I would love to see his character just slow down and, again, just really build and keep that going. Keep the slow build. It's not going to happen, unfortunately, and I just don't see that happening. And that's a shame because that's what makes great people great. But he could be great without the slow build. I mean, we'll see. That people get burned out. I mean, look at Cesaro now. They gave him a build. Look at Ryback and, you know,
Curtis Axel.
It flipped my mind, Mr. Perfect's kid. So
yeah, exactly.
So. But with Reigns, I mean, I don't know if they can really screw it up that bad because, I mean, he's got a lot of people behind him, but, I mean, they could, but we'll see. That's the only thing you can say with the WWE, but, I mean, that's a good point to bring up.
Yeah, and his match with Kane, it was very typical. I mean, at this point, you know that Roman Reigns is going to win the match. It seems like it's going to be hard for him to lose cleanly, which I think that he needs to do that maybe once. I just think he needs to tone down his character. He's just getting too Superman. It's not going to be okay, because here's the thing. If they push him the way that they do, he's just going to be another John Cena. And that's the issue. They really need to spend some time with Roman Reigns and just really have him develop his character. I really like him I really think he should be the babyface, because the WWE needs a new face, and he was a heel for, November of 2012 to a little bit before WrestleMania. So nearly just about a year and a half he was a heel. So he was a heel for long enough to really say that he was a heel, you know, in order to make that good babyface turn. Because when the Shield became face, they were really, really dominant heels, and that just made their face turn even stronger. I believe, to be honest with you, I believe that the Shield should have been baby faces a little bit longer. And I understand that they wanted to break up and they wanted to make Roman Reigns the guy. But at the same time, at this point, you have John Cena and Brock Lesnar. He's going to be overshadowed by Cena and Lesnar for August and most likely September, because Night of Champions, they're going to try to renew their subscription, so they're going to most likely make a rematch, rubber match between John Cena and Brock Lesnar, and I'm sure they're going to bill it as a rubber match. So at this point, they're really at the point where they're trying to make Roman Reigns somebody that he really can't be right now because of Cena and Lesnar. So would a Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar match be okay? I think it'd draw. But I don't see that happening until maybe next Extreme Rules, possibly. We'll see Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns for the title. And I definitely think Roman Reigns should go over Brock Lesnar, so they'll be passing the torch. So maybe Reigns and Lesnar at Extreme Rules. So I think Mania 31 has the ability to actually become a little bit more spectacular than 30. I know that 30 was Daniel Bryan's night, and I was totally a fan of it. I actually wore a Yes hoodie a WrestleMania night. But I think as far as the larger-than-life draws, I think we're going to see Roman Reigns and Cena, and I think we may get to see Rock and Lesnar finally after, 12 years. 2000, SummerSlam 2002. So we're looking at 12 years, and at that point in time, it'll be, 12 and a half years, over 12 and a half years, that we'll see Rock and Brock again. So 31 should be pretty good. If those two are the big marquee matches, it'll be a really good, WrestleMania. Damian Sandow cuts a promo with an Oklahoma helmet and T-shirt. Out comes Mark Henry, makes his return with a Texas T-shirt and defeats Damian Sandow. I think at this point they really don't know what to do with both Sandow and Henry, so this was a perfect match between the two, because the WWE has no idea what to do with either of them. There was a report that we had on Wrestling.com that Mark Henry actually was siding with Cena and kind of pulled a slight little heel turn on Cena at a live event about a month or two ago. But live events don't really mean nothing. It's just kind of trials, feelers to see if things work. There's a few live events that, and dark matches that Damian Sandow was playing a babyface last year. So They try it out. But at this point, I really hope that WrestleMania 31 is the very end for Mark Henry. And to be honest with you, there should be a send-off, and Ryan and I were talking about this, I think it was last week, there should be a send-off of just about every one of those Attitude Era people who are still around, a la Big Show, Christian, and Mark Henry. Those are the two names that are still, especially Big Show and Mark Henry, they're active wrestlers. Christian would be an active wrestler if he's just not so injury-prone, getting concussions and all types of injuries. But he'll be ready and back to have one more run. But I really think WrestleMania 31 should be the end of all three of them. Maybe have a Attitude Era triple threat match between Christian, Big Show, and Mark Henry. I'd be in favor of that.
Yeah, you'd be in favor of that. And just a touchdown with Sandow. When he came out last night, I honestly thought JR. For a second in my mind, I thought, that's JR.
No way.
Yeah. Yes, well, I'm a marching band theme song. So anyway, I mean, that was great. And I understand what you're saying with Mark Henry. They don't have nothing to do with him. They've got no ideas for him, and that's a shame. He could have been so much more than what they built him to be throughout the – I think he started there in, like, 96 or something. I mean, it was – I would say 96. I mean, he's been there for that long, and they've always flopped with him. That's such a shame. Be the end of him. I love Christian. I want Christian to I can see him having one more run and just calling it
as
a day.
As champion?
No, I wouldn't say champion, but just have another run.
Yeah.
I didn't think he could have another run. Talked it up with Fandango and
No.
Yeah, so,
what are they
going to be called? He's a wasted talent, and that's too bad.
You just need to give up on Fandango, man.
I thought of JR last night, and that was beautiful. Good old Jim Ross. The absolute number one commentator of all time. Who's better than JR?
I totally agree with that. What do you think about Gordon Sully? Were you a Gordon Sully fan at all?
Oh, a souplex.
A belly-to-belly souplex. Dusty Rhodes with the belly-to-belly souplex. Oh, the four horsemen.
Mike Tenay was great. I mean, there's a lot of great commentators.
Today was not very good. How dare you throw in the name Mike Tenay with JR and Gordon? I wasn't a big Gordon Sully fan. I mean, he's a legend, though. I mean, he's a legend.
But, yeah, I mean, JR's the best, hands down. Nobody's better. And with Jim Lawler, no one's better than those two together, except for maybe Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. Tell me that wasn't that.
Yeah, I think Gorilla and Heenan was good.
Jesse Ventura was great with Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. I think that Jesse and Gorilla was good. Wow, Gorilla! I think that they were really good. I also think that Gorilla and Heenan were good. I think those are the best two duos. Was Heenan and Gorilla, and then Ventura and Gorilla, and I'm trying to think of a good color, and of course you got JR and Jerry Lawler. I mean, all the years that they put into WWE Raw, and then you have the older generation, about 30 plus years ago with Tony Schiavone and Bob Cottle. That's a blast from the past. Bob Cottle from Mid-South Wrestling. from Mid-South. And so, yeah, you have the Mid-South, and then you have, you know, a bunch of different commentators.
Don't discredit Vincent being awesome at such commentary.
Vincent Jesse. I think Vincent Jesse was also good. Those two. And Vincent Heenan was good, too. I agree that Vince was a really good commentator. From the no chance Vince McMahon, you know, when he birthed that in the late 90s, it's so, you know, 15 years ago, it's so difficult to think about how, well, that was more like 17, 18 years ago. It's so difficult to really think of Vince McMahon as just a neutral broadcast journalist, you know, after seeing Mr. McMahon after around 97. So, but, you know, us people who've been watching wrestling, you know, in the 80s and 90s, early 90s, you know, we definitely respect the heck out of Vince McMahon's broadcast work, announcing work. And he would just Vince McMahon really knew how to pump the heck out of a pay per view. Welcome everyone to the Pontiac Superdome. Welcome everyone to Pontiac, Michigan. Welcome everyone to 103,000 strong. Welcome everyone to WrestleMania. He would just always say welcome everyone and some type of big attribute to go with that, and it would be so exciting, and he would just build the pay-per-view so much, and he would build the shows too, especially Monday. Welcome everyone to Monday Night Raw and Saturday Night's Main Event too. So I definitely give major kudos to Vince McMahon. Speaking of that, what year was the very first Saturday Night's Main Event? What year was the very first? I was not talking to you. You know the drill. Come on. You know the drill.
Slipped.
Yeah, it slipped. Of course it slipped. Yeah, 1985. What was the paper? What was the main event?
It was King Kong Bundy. That would probably have something to do with WrestleMania. Maybe Piper and maybe Orange. Ah, wow. That's a good. Probably no. Junkyard Dog was probably in the paper or in the main event. I don't know. Tell me.
It was the Uncle Elmer wedding.
Oh! I think Hulk Hogan was the best man, or
Yeah, he was. Hulk Hogan went against Nikolai Volkoff that night.
Okay.
Saturday Night's Main Event, and then
honestly think back, that was a pretty uneventful Saturday Night's Main Event.
It was. It really was. But what was so funny about it was that you have a main event, and I think if I'm not mistaken, it was either that Saturday Night's Main Event or the one after, where the actual main event, I think, was Moolah against Rockin' Robin for the woman's title. I think, because I know that Hogan and Koloff, was billed as the biggest match, but it certainly wasn't the last match of the night. And I'll have the interns check it out and see, but I definitely don't think it was an eventful and exciting Saturday Night's Main Event back in '85. I totally agree with you. And but the funny thing is, you know, watching as a kid, it was just so excited. It was just so thrilling. Still, it was just so thrilling every single time. Even at the Uncle Elmer wedding, and it was just absolutely amazing. It was, well, Hogan and Orton was the very first, yeah, Junkyard Dog beat Pete Doherty in 3 minutes and 15 seconds. And the second one, the second was the Uncle Elmer wedding, the second main event. So, and the very first one, you're right, it was Junkyard Dog against Pete Doherty. And so, very interesting. Hogan won against Orton. U.S. Express defeated, U.S. Express and Steamboat defeated Nikolai Volkoff, the Iron Sheik, and George the Animal Steel. And then, yes, I was right. The very first one was the Women's Championship. Wendy Richter defeated the Fabulous Moolah. So it was just 4 matches. And then the second one was Hogan defeating Volkoff. So that was the flag match. That was the first match of the night. And then Uncle Elmer defeating Jerry Valiant. I remember that. It was like they built it as 12 seconds, but it seemed like it was a lot shorter than that. Orndorff fought Piper, double count out. Andre and Tony Atlas beat King Kong Buddy and Stud by DQ, and then the main event was the Dream Team defeating Lanny Poffo and Tony Garea. So very, very, very fun stuff at Saturday night's main event. And you're right, man, it really didn't get very good until maybe 86. I remember Hogan and Morocco fought at March of 86 before WrestleMania. That was okay. Then it was like a 2 out of 3 falls match in 86 with the British Bulldogs and Nikolai Volkoff and Iron Sheik. I remember that. I definitely remember that team. Russia, number one, Iran, number one, USA, ha, bah. And Iron Sheik for you, man. He's definitely a legend. As crazy as he is right now. I got a chat, got a comment in chat where the Mega Powers exploded against Boss Man and Akeem. Best Saturday Night's main event. For those in the chat room, what year was that? What year was that? All right, let's get to Raw. We go in tangents of yesteryear, and they are much more exciting to me than covering the new stuff. All right, next we have Dean Ambrose. The first Beat the Clock challenge was Dean Ambrose against Brother Del Rio. Went over 15 minutes. Almost 15 and a half minutes. Really good match. I figured that these two putting a match together was going to be pretty good. But my biggest thing out of all this is, what's the future of Alberto Del Rio look like?
It looks horrible. I mean, he's got nothing. It was like a year ago. He's coming out. He has this long scarf. I mean, he looked really posh, debonair. He came out in a long stretch Cadillac or limo, whatever it was, and he had Ricardo. He was big money at the time. I mean, he was champion. And now he's just a pouch in the wind. I mean, he's really nothing. And he's just another face on Raw. And there's a lot of faces on Raw, but he's just, you know, he's nothing. I mean, it was just kind of make Ambrose continue on his rampage of, you know, being unstable and everything like that. So, I mean, he's going to be another statistic in WWE as far as, you know, just being, I was somebody, but now I'm nothing. A la Ryback, Ziggler, a lot of these people that, you know, had something in the past, but now they're just on there as a bit of filler.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's so crazy about that is that Alberto Del Rio was complaining for so long about his position, which to me I think that's ridiculous anyways, because I understand that he was a huge name in Mexico as Dos Caras, and I understand all that. But at the same time, I definitely think that, you know, you're not in Mexico anymore, Doc. I mean, you're not, you know, some big Mexican wrestler that is, you know, big in the States. I did like his character initially. I think it was fun. I think it was exciting. I think I was early on the Alberto Del Rio bandwagon. I mustn't lie about that. But it went away very fast and very quickly and very hard because, I mean, him winning the 40-man Royal Rumble and just going through all that and just still not really making much of an impression, it really didn't do much to me whatsoever. And I definitely think that the WWE kind of really, like, they really bit the bullet on that, to be honest with you. And I don't think that they are very happy with their investment in Del Rio. I think it shows. That's the big thing. And they still, and it's, even last year, they still tried to make him champion, and it still didn't work. And he hasn't been relevant since, like, 2011. And he just, last year they tried to still make him relevant. The beginning of 2013, they gave him a babyface run. He beat the Big Show. And then, you know, they had the nerve to book him and Swagger as the World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania 29. That was a horrible decision. And then, you know, the double turn and with him and Ziggler, and it just didn't work out. I mean, here's the thing, and I said this during the show last year, during I think it was Night of Champions when Night of Champions or SummerSlam or Survivor Series when Cena won. I think it was Night of Champions. I'll have the intern check that out. But I definitely think that during that time, the show last year, I was talking about how much I'm not a Cena fan, but I certainly want John Cena to win that match because I was just so not supportive of Alberto Del Rio at all. And I was very happy that John Cena won because he definitely made a better World Heavyweight Champion than Alberto Del Rio did. I mean, the guy's 37 years old, and he's two-time World Heavyweight Champion, two-time WWE Champion. I definitely think that in his short run in the WWE, you know, having that type of run, I mean, there's not much more you can ask for. And he was only in the WWE for a year before he came up as Alberto Del Rio. He was in FCW for a year, a little over a year, like a year and a week, and then he came up as Alberto Del Rio, the aristocrat, and it worked really well. But yeah, it just didn't work out for him. It really turned out to really not be the best run for, in hindsight, Alberto Del Rio, every single one of his reigns are really forgettable. They really are forgettable, and I don't think that Del Rio was a really good idea to really have that type of meteoric push. It was Hell in a Cell, by the way. Hell in a Cell was when John Cena defeated Alberto Del Rio to win the World Heavyweight Championship, and then, of course, that led to the unification match at TLC with him and Orton. So next we have Rusev defeating Sin Cara. Now, for some reason, they were really, and obnoxiously plugging the WWE Network. Obnoxiously, I'm going to keep saying that. I'm going to obnoxiously say obnoxiously. How about that? But even if I obnoxiously say obnoxiously, I still wouldn't be as obnoxious as the WWE plugging the WWE Network so much. I mean, it just seems so desperate to me. It was just absolutely ridiculous. And then they had Rusev defeat Sin Cara on the WWE app, and Michael Cole said the WWE app is, you know, one step closer to reaching the WWE Network, and JBL writing $9.99 on his piece of paper. And it just seems like a really desperate attempt to really plug the network, and because they're just counting their losses, and it was just ridiculous having Sin Cara lose on the WWE app was just absolutely ridiculous to me. I will, you know, give kudos to the intensity of the build between Rusev and Swagger, because I personally think that that's the best feud going on right now, just as far as the intensity and just, you know, Patriot Wars are always fun to watch. I mean, we've seen them throughout our day. We've seen, you know, Del Wilkes go against Bret Hart, and, you know, we've seen Hulk Hogan go against Nikolai Volkoff, and, you know, we've seen it in our days. We've seen, you know, Duggan and Bravo. You know, it's all the Patriot Wars are always fun to watch, and we're getting one now again. Now it's USA versus, you know, Russia. And so I think that we'll get it. We'll see it. It's going to be fun. Of course, we had Hulk Hogan and Slaughter when he was a turncoat. So the Patriot angles always, you know, they typically always work, and this one is working as well. This one is absolutely no different. I'm very high on this angle, and I think that they are doing a really good job. But as far as it. The him winning on the app, I just think that was just overkill.
It's overkill, and I think this angle is overkill. I agree with the Patriot Act and all that stuff as far as, not the Patriot Act, but
not
America
the
against the
Patriot
bad guys. Angle. But you know, I don't think this is working. I really don't believe that this is working. I'm really bored of it. They make too much of it. I mean, it's fun, Vladimir Putin, and Natasha's cute, but Swagger's lost so many times already, and it's boring, and it's just not really, I don't find it interesting at all, and it goes on way too long.
One of the biggest reasons why I see it interesting is because we finally get something from Jack Swagger. I mean, you can't just have Swagger be an underutilized talent and not get some type of something. And of course, Dirty Dutch Mantel, Zeb Coulter, how in the world could anybody ever make him, you know, an underutilized talent? This guy is amazing on the mic. And I'm happy with what they're doing right now. It gives Swagger some exposure, because he really needs to grasp every single moment that he can, because, to be honest with you, when he, after this, and he may win the flag match, just because we'll get to predictions next week, of course, because we have SummerSlam coming up a week from Sunday. But I don't know. It just really seems as if they don't have much for Swagger, but this is a perfect way to push Rusev. But I don't know, man. I might leak a prediction here. I got a feeling that this feud is not over with. We may see Jack Swagger win the flag match, just because it's not really a pin. And, you know, of course they'll turn into Rusev's been unpinned, and they'll just kind of change the wording a little bit in the quote-unquote undefeated streak. So I still don't think the feud is going to be over with. I think we'll see the culmination of it at Night of Champions. I really think we will. So hopefully Sin Cara, hopefully Jack Swagger wins. the flag match, but I'm not quite sure. Next we have Ziggler versus Cesaro, and this is another wasted talent. I really like the fact that they're doing Ziggler Miz. I think that's much better than the idea of unifying the titles. I don't think the mid-card titles should be unified, especially since the main event titles, the world titles unified. You need those two, as much as loaded as the roster is, as many people on the WWE roster, they need two mid-card champions. They just do. And it really showcases a lot of the main event superstars that probably won't get any type of love for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship scene anytime soon, because that's such a you have to be the face of the company title. Whereas when they had the World Heavyweight Championship, you were not necessarily the face of the company, but at the same time, you were still credited as a world champion in the WWE. So I don't ever see The Miz becoming WWE World Heavyweight Champion. I don't ever see Ziggler, maybe Sheamus, but probably not. Mark Henry, The Big Show. You have all of these main events, Del Rio. You have all of these main event style people. RVD is another one. All these main event style people. All these main event caliber stars that are still there without a World Heavyweight Championship, they really don't have anything else to do but to win a mid-card championship. That's why both the U.S. and the Intercontinental Champion are both former WWE champions. Both of them are, Miz and Sheamus. So, but I like that, though, because it brings more prestige in the mid-card title, which has been something that they have been lacking for so long. And I like what they're doing. So Ziggler Miz should be pretty good. But the sad part is Cesaro is just done. Talk about your wasted talent. Cesaro is such a wasted talent right now. It's absolutely embarrassing to utilize Cesaro the way that they are. And, I mean, he needs an overhaul quick, fast, and in a hurry. Otherwise, he will cement himself. He's almost there, but he will cement himself as a jobber.
He'll be a jobber like many others, and that's what happened. Especially when he shows up with Paul Heyman last week, and we're no longer pals, but we'll do what we can because we still respect each other. Stupid. I mean, that's absolute garbage. Cesaro will be just another nobody. I mean, he knows that, and I feel sorry for him because he's somebody that he could go on to be a little bit something, but they just over-pollute the WWE with the Randy Ortons and the Brock Lesnars, and it just doesn't Cesaro does not have a place among the heavyweight elites with John Cena.
Yeah, sadly. And if the World Heavyweight Championship was still around individually, someone like Cesaro would have a fantastic push. I would love it. I would totally be in favor if Cesaro was World Heavyweight Champion. But since they unified the titles, sadly, it's just nothing anymore. Next, we have Goldust and Stardust defeating Rybacksel. For some reason, they coined Goldust and Stardust saying that they were returning. They didn't really return. They just didn't fight in matches. They were just doing backstage interviews for weeks. I like Goldust and Stardust. I'm still on that wagon. But where in the world is the tag team division going? It just seems like they've eclipsed themselves and they hit like some type of glass ceiling with the amazing feud between Eric Rowan and Luke Harper against the Usos. We didn't even see, the Usos weren't even there. We didn't even see the tag team champions a week before the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. That's absolutely ridiculous. And I think that at this point you have to, if you want a tag team match, that's going to get even minutely close to the matches that the Usos had with Rowan and Harper. Yeah, I mean, do like a four-way match, I suppose. But I doubt, I mean, with Rowan and Harper being involved in this Wyatt family feud with Jericho, you know, on SmackDown, he beat Eric Rowan, and Eric Rowan because he beat Rowan, he was able to, Rowan can't come out against Bray Wyatt, and then, you know, we'll get to his match with Harper here in a minute, but just to throw them right back into the tag team division a week before the pay-per-view just seems like they're just throwing something together. And they haven't been throwing anything together the past few months because you've had a great feud. So that's why I just don't understand the booking. I really don't understand the booking. You have, like I said before, you have Raw, which is 3 hours. You have SmackDown, 2 hours. You have Main Event, an hour. And you have Superstars, an hour. So you have 7 hours of WWE programming a week. And out of those 7 hours, you can't spend like Superstars and Main Event and really developing a really good feud outside of Raw and SmackDown. The tag team division should be showcased on Main Event and Superstars, period. Because you are trying to promote the network so much, you're not okay with your subscribers. You're about 250,000 shy of your projected subscribers at this point. And so you're really trying to promote the main event and superstar shows. Why not have angles being developed on SmackDown, on Superstars and Main Event? It's perfect. Instead of just scheduling a match, okay, we're having Sheamus defend his U.S. title. Okay, we have, you know, The Miz defending, or we have when Wade Barrett was Intercontinental Champion. Wade Barrett's going to defend his Intercontinental Championship this week. Okay, but it still was not any type of storyline development. So they really need to spend some time developing their storylines, or else people just aren't going to watch Main Event Superstars. Next we have Goldust and Stardust defeating Ryback. I don't know how you feel about that as far as the tag team division is concerned.
Tag team division has really been going downhill. I mean, we praised it not too long ago about how great it's been.
Yeah.
But again, the Usos were not there last night. I mean, that's the tag team division right now. Stardust, they've been doing promos, big deal. I mean, what are they going to do as far as they made Ryback look like nothing last night? They really did. And to make Ryback look great is what they used to be. I mean, you put them together as a tag team, they're great. But it just makes them look kind of silly. I mean, it was kind of an easy win, so I'm not too keen on that. But, I mean, the tag team division could be so much better. And I don't know why they're not doing that.
Yeah, and at this point, they need tag teams to really – they need to form tag teams, to be honest with you.
My team is old, and they've been there for a while now, and they're just not really producing anything, and it's kind of stale for the tag team division.
They need to – that's the problem. They need to form tag teams. See, you have – half of Los Matadores are injured, so Eddie Colon's injured, and so Los Matadores is not a team now. You have your boys' primetime players broke up. You know, they split up, so that was just a ridiculous decision because Titus O'Neil's doing absolutely nothing now other than randomly tagging with Heath Slater, who we'll talk about in just a minute. And so you have Rybacksel, who wins two matches and loses the next 12. And then you have, of course, the two top teams, Rowan and Harper, and the champions, the Usos. And then you have Goldust and Stardust, which is a very eclectic, different style tag team, but they're not in the tag team hunt. So, and now they're trying to do Kofi Kingston and Big E. I'm okay with that team. But, again, we didn't see them last night. And it's ridiculous because Xavier Woods, as we saw those who watched the network in NXT, last week on NXT, they're developing the storyline between Xavier Woods and CJ Parker. And they have a match coming up this week on NXT. So still, at that point in NXT, Xavier Woods is still playing the babyface. So, but he's supposed to be some type of Clarence Mason, you know, heel type of person with this Nation 2.0. And why in the world are you taking a couple steps back on this whole Nation 2.0 thing? Granted, I didn't like it, but at the same time, it's better than not being seen at all. Neither Big E or Kofi Kingston or Xavier Woods was on Raw, period. So what are they going to do with this gimmick? And you don't make appearances on Raw. It baffles me. It makes absolutely no sense to me. Next we have Kane. Before we get to the Jericho Harper match, Kane walks up to Triple H and Stephanie backstage and takes off his mask. So are we going to see corporate Kane again?
I hope we don't. Kane, period. They need to do something with Kane. I mean, I'm just sick of this job Kane, Mark Henry, Big Show Kane that's come out. It makes me absolute sick. Kane needs to put up a better fight. He needs to put up better, just make a better match out of what you can do. I mean, the guy's a legitimate superstar. But they just don't know what to do with Kane. They just make him look like such a weak individual. Put up a fight, Kane, for crying out loud. Just put up a fight. I mean, you lose so easily. And it bothers me. Attitude error for life.
Yeah, the crazy part of that, even then we had Kane win for a little bit. I mean, he was just taking it by storm, just beating up on Vader and Foley. But even after that, he feuded with Austin and didn't get the best of Austin and didn't get the best of Taker. And so Kane has been notorious for losing matches.
He looks like such a loser on Raw, and it just makes me sick to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's going to be this big corporate giant that they want him to be, make him put up a fight better, not better than Randy Orton, because that's their golden boy, but at least something. Make it believable.
Yeah. And for someone to be notorious for sitting up, you know, when he gets a move executed on him and sitting up, and to go from that to not being able to get up when Roman Reigns speared him, absolutely horrible. We got the intern giving out a question on the chat room. Didn't give me any permission to do that. No, the intern definitely can continue to spice up the chat room and make it exciting. So I'm gonna say it out loud here. What was the main event of Great American Bash 1990? So go ahead and answer the question the intern put out on the chat room, and let's see who has the quickest answer. Next we have Jericho defeating Harper. Good match. I knew that they were going to have a good match. Jericho and Harper are pretty good. I knew that they were going to have a good connection because I definitely think of Luke Harper as a, for a big man, I follow him when he was Brody Lee. for a big man, he's fantastic. He's a really agile. He's a really good wrestler. Very weird, bizarre character. Yeah. I think that's cool. And so I definitely think that Luke Harper put on a good show, put on a good match against Chris Jericho. I was expecting that, and definitely did that. I was hoping that he didn't beat Jericho cleanly. That would have really hurt Jericho. So I'm okay with the fact that Bray Wyatt distracted and he won by DQ, because it still means that Harper can't be at ringside at SummerSlam. So I definitely think that Jericho Wyatt will be a good match again, but at the same time, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not as big on Jericho Wyatt as a lot of other people is. And then Bray Wyatt every week, he's coming out and just getting the best of Jericho. How strong is that? How strong is that going to make Jericho look if every week he gets out, every week he gets beat up by Bray Wyatt? Like, how strong is that going to make Bray Wyatt's win look at SummerSlam? And it's just not. Why in the world are you having Jericho get beat up and attacked by Bray Wyatt every week? It would make perfect sense for him to elude attacks from them every week and even get the best of them and play mind games and then lose to Bray Wyatt if Bray Wyatt's going to beat him, which more than likely he is. So it just doesn't make sense that he just gets beat up every week by Bray Wyatt. I think that's bad booking.
Bad booking, and Chris Jericho, coolest guy that ever lived. But against Bray Wyatt, I mean, I can work for Bray Wyatt, and I can also kind of work for Jericho, but I don't know what Jericho's role is in wrestling anymore. I mean, he's got the heavy metal band and everything, but Bray Wyatt, I mean, he's strictly wrestling. My microphone just dropped because it just broke. I can't believe that. Can you hear me, Chris?
Yes, I can, absolutely.
Yeah, hey, my microphone holder just broke. I can't believe that. I need a new one. Radio Shack sucks. But Chris Jericho, I mean, that guy, he can make people. I mean, this could honestly probably make Wyatt just look like gold. And maybe it could. I don't want Jericho to lose, but the feud is a little better than when Wyatt was against John Cena, because John Cena is always going to be the victor, regardless. But Jericho, there's a little bit leeway, or if Jericho always puts on the best show that you can see, he steals the show, kind of like a la Shawn Michaels. So this can only project Bray Wyatt, as far as I'm concerned. And we'll see where that goes from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a valid point. It's just that the way they're billing the match to me is just flawed. I just don't like that Bray Wyatt's the hunter for him to be the hunter every week and then beat Jericho is just, to me, it's a flat build. I just think it's a flat build. Next we have Diego defeating your boy Fandango, and Fandango had the nerve to come out with Hornswoggle, and Hornswoggle had nothing at the end of the match. Hornswoggle didn't want anything to do with Fandango, so even Hornswoggle is abandoning Fandango. Derek, I think it's about time, man.
You know what? This really hurts, because Fandango is my boy. I'm at a loss for a word. WWE just needs to figure something to do with this guy. I think he's got a load of talent. I mean, I want to believe in the Fandango spirit. That's just me. That's Derek. I am the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. If you love Fandango, please let me know, because he needs all your support. He needs all your help. I still like the guy. I love the guy. He's a wrestler. He's somebody that I can get behind his character and think that he's great. Thank you for the plug, Chris. Jim Cornette, forever.
No.
When was the last time I brought up Jim Cornette? It's been a while.
That's, That's true. That's true. It's been a while since you brought up Jim Cornette. Well, actually, it's been a few weeks. Well, actually, I brought up Jim Cornette because I was talking about the Midnight Express theme song that you totally bombed. But, yeah, I think initially you initiating the Jim Cornette plug, I think that it's been a little bit. It's been a few weeks, so kudos to that. But it looks like that has been reset because you mentioned Jim Cornette. But Fandango, I think it's a lost cause, Derek. I think you should go ahead and just go ahead and chalk it up, man. I think it's the point. It's to the point where Fandango, unless Fandango gets a tag team partner, I think the perfect partner for Fandango would be Tyler Breeze from NXT. But cool. Other than that, if that doesn't happen, I think it's all done. Fandango, he needs to be in a tag team. I mean, that's without a doubt. He has to be.
He has to be in a tag team. But listen, you said it wrong. It's Fandango.
And then he gets pinned.
Okay. So what's next?
What's next is Bo Dallas defending R-Truth. We're seeing more of a heel side of Bo Dallas. I think that they're doing this because they don't want Bo Dallas to be a face. Like he came in as a heel, but it backfired because those are the type of heels that the marks like. They like the cocky heels that are just playing, like they're just really kind of mocking the heel role. And I think that Bo Dallas is doing that exactly. He's doing that to the T. And people are getting into the Bo Dallas craze because he's playing such a mockery of a heel. But now he's showing a mean streak. And, I just am not sold. Of course, you have R-Truth beating up on Bo Dallas at the end of the match, and then Bo getting the upper hand and beating up on R-Truth. To be honest, I really don't want to see a Bo Dallas and R-Truth feud. I just don't. I like R-Truth. I'm still holding on to R-Truth. I let go when he was teaming up with Eve Torres when she was like his dancer. That was absolutely horrible. And he actually changed his theme song at the time, too. That was so terrible when that happened. But the little Jimmy comes around and all that. I was cool with that. Conspiracy, C-O-N-spiracy, that was hilarious, too. And I like R-Truth, man. I don't know what it is. I think he's athletic. I think that he's one of them guys who you really know been busting his butt for the business for so long. You know, back in the Attitude Era, he was Kate Quick, you know, getting rowdy, about to move some things. And to go from there to TNA, when it was NWA TNA, and to become a two-time NWA champion, I mean, that's that alone, you know, a black NWA champion, that alone is worth it's worth being very proud about. You know, if I was R-Truth and know that I was a two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion, the legacy that the NWA title, you know, brings is absolutely incredible. So, of course, he didn't do much in the WWE, although he was U.S. Champion and Tag Team Champion, so that's something to put on his resume as well. But as far as the main event level, he didn't do much. Main evented, I think it was Capital Punishment a few years ago against John Cena. That was the one and only Capital Punishment pay-per-view, which was very interesting. But I mean, I got to give kudos to R-Truth, man. I like the guy, and he's upwards of 40 now, if not 40. Still, you know, still has it, still has the ability, still in good shape. And, you know, I'm an R-Truth fan. The only thing is, feuding against Bo Dallas is absolutely ridiculous, and I wonder if he's going to migrate over to this Nation 2.0 angle if they continue to even do it.
R-Truth, yeah, I mean, they can do it. They can have a good run, but I don't think either one's really going to benefit from it, so kind of a lost run. But, you know, Bo Dallas is 42.
Yeah,
forget it.
First black NWA world champion.
Well, that's cool too. So, Bo Dallas, forever Bo Leaf. But I don't really, R-Truth is on his decline.
Yeah, but to say that he's the first black NWA champion, I mean, granted, the NWA title these days isn't as nearly as prestigious as when, you know, it was the main title of the, you know, JCP, Jim Crockett Promotions. Definitely not as prestigious as when Flair and Harley and Steamboat and Sting and all of them had it. Dusty, of course, it's not as prestigious as it was then. But, you know, you have people like Adam Pearce. He's been a multi-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion nowadays. Rob Conway is the current NWA champion. Of course, we know Rob Conway from the French sympathizer for La Resistance. And then he became, you know, just look at me type of egotistical gimmick that didn't really work too well. Did you ever wrestle with Rob Conway?
No, I did not. I mean, he came to Cincinnati for a few times. A lot of times when we were in practice and WWE was in town, they would come to HWA Arena and practice. I mean, I've seen... I think it was Eddie Guerrero was there. I remember Chris Benoit was there a few times. Mm-hmm. Jamie Noble was there a lot, and that was great because he showed a few things. But overall, it was a great experience. With Rob Conway, yeah, I remember him there. But I do remember Rob Conway. I mean, I thought he was a great performer and star at the time, so... Good times. That's a great name to bring up. You should try to get him on the show. I think he would come on.
I actually think that's a great idea. I think that Rob Conway, I'll have my admin staff to get on that, to get Rob Conway on the show. Yeah, I think that I'm happy that Conway's the NWA champion because I always thought that he was a really good athlete. The faux French sympathizer gimmick that he was a part of with La Resistance, that was a bit odd, but it worked, though. It worked. The gimmicks that he had before and after that wasn't as successful, but definitely the La Resistance was successful. He's in his second reign as NWA World Heavyweight Champion that he won a couple of months ago. He regained it from Satoshi Kojima in Vegas, I think it was. Yeah, so, you know, NWA World Champion, but here's the thing. The NWA World Heavyweight Champion, that alone sounds prestigious because of what came with the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, because that was so prestigious. And, you know, it's not the names with it now isn't as prestigious as it was 30 years ago, but at the same time, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship is still a prestigious belt to have because of its lineage and its legacy. And for R-Truth to say that he was the first black NWA champion, I mean, that title's been around for I think it was like the late 40s. It's been like almost 70 years since it's been around. So, for him to say that, January 5th, 1948. So we're at, you know, we're almost 70 years that it's been around, and he won his first His first reign was, I believe, 03, 04 maybe, something around there. So you're looking at, you know, what, 55 years, or, you know, around there to become, for a black man to win the champ, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship that long. So kudos to R-Truth, man. I mean, for him to be the token guy, for him to be that guy to win the title, you know, major kudos to him. So, you know, he can be in this slump for sure, but at the same time, you know, I totally think that he can hold his head up high for sure to say that he's been an NWA World Heavyweight Champion for sure. Next, we have Heath Slater defeating Seth Rollins. After a while, I had a feeling that he was going to do this. To me, and I'm okay with this because it takes away the predictability factor, and it makes Ambrose kind of have an edge this week. I don't think he's going to win the match. I think I'm leaking just about all my results out, but I don't think he's going to win the match at SummerSlam. But I do think the whole mind games that he's doing, I'm really growing on this Rollins and Ambrose feud for SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be great. Rollins and Ambrose, I mean, there's kind of like this aspect between it that you just don't know what's going to happen with it. You can give your predictions, but I really don't think that anyone has a clear understanding who's going to win. I mean, is Rogan going to be a part of it? I mean, what's going to happen? So it's kind of exciting. That's probably one of my favorite matches for SummerSlam, just to see what's going to transpire and give the thing a go between the two. I mean, they've got a lot to show and they've got a lot to prove.
Absolutely. August 7, 2002 was the first reign of R-Truth when he was, of course, Ron the Truth Killing. So that was almost exactly a dozen years ago. Wow. Time is just flying. 12 years ago when he first won his NWA. I remember it very clearly because I was so happy that he won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, but that was 12 years ago. Time is absolutely flying. But yeah, the angle's building pretty good. I would say that to me that's the number two angle behind Swagger and Rusev. To me, I wouldn't really give Cena and Lesnar a number one spot or a number two spot because, first of all, they haven't really had like a face-to-face because Lesnar has his limited dates, and then Cena was out doing his movie for a Raw, and then Heyman was the middleman, but Heyman was out. So all of them, you know, was out. So it definitely didn't do much justice for them to have all three of them out. And, of course, yeah, they showed, you know, all types of video promos throughout the night. But, I mean, this is SummerSlam we're talking about here. We need to have a little bit more build. We need them to be at Raw, which I'm sure all three of them will be at Raw on Monday. But that's the go-home show before SummerSlam. So the appearances matter. So. But we get the main event of the evening, Stephanie and Brie contract signing. Kudos to Stephanie, and I've said this many times before. Mick Foley just recently wrote a blog on Facebook saying that he's a Stephanie McMahon guy, just touting about how much he respects the heck out of Stephanie McMahon, sharing some old stories. And I have to give it to him. I agree. I think that Stephanie McMahon is really filling those shoes of Vince McMahon. Of course, there will never be another Vince McMahon, but Stephanie McMahon is just really doing a fantastic job fitting that McMahon heel role, and she's really given a lot of rub to Brie Bella and to both of the Bellas, period, but especially Brie for, I mean, what in the world did she do to put her in that amazing position to go against Stephanie McMahon at SummerSlam? Maybe it's some type of atonement for Daniel Bryan being forced to relinquish the WWE World Heavyweight Championship because of injury. That may be the case, but, I mean, Brie Bella couldn't be any happier, I would imagine. So I'm liking this angle. I think that this is a really good angle, too. I think that this is one of the top angles as well, and it's leading to a really good and very highly anticipated match between the two.
Yeah, it's going to be good. You know, like I said, I think Stephanie's just trying to take the role for Dad Vince McMahon back in the Stone Cold era, back in the Attitude era. And it's fun. I enjoy it. So I think Stephanie McMahon's really going to make a mark as far as her role in the WWE. It's interesting. I don't think that was the best thing to end Raw on, but Stephanie McMahon wants to make a point. So we'll give them that much. Authority has to show what they have, and they can't do it with Randy Orton. I think they know that. So end Raw with Stephanie McMahon. I'm in for that. Like, again, no chance in hell is what you had with Vince McMahon. What do you got with Stephanie?
Kingdom. I don't know the lyrics, but that's her theme song. It's definitely no chance type of presence to it. Yeah, but I guess it works for her. All right, real quick, just a very brief minute on Destination X. Good solid show as far as in-ring competition is concerned. Definitely got the partnership with Sonata and James Storm should be interesting. I would love to see this lead to a great Muda, either Storm versus Muda, Storm versus Sonata. Either one should work as far as Bound for Glory is concerned in a couple of months. But the Wolves and the Hardy Boys was really good. Good to see the Hardy Boys back. We had Low-Key, Sonata, and Samoa Joe all win their respective matches for the X Division title tournament for the triple threat match happening on this week. And then the world title, Lashley defeating Austin Aries. Austin Aries cashes in his Option C X Division title for a World Heavyweight Championship match at Destination X, which he originated Option C. Really good match, but they're really putting a lot of stock into Bobby Lashley, which I wasn't a fan of it in the beginning, but I think that Lashley is starting to become a good heel dominant champion for a good babyface to chase, which I think this is going to lead to a match between he and Bobby Roode at Bound for Glory, which may see another run by Bobby Roode, which would be pretty fun, and especially as a face, so this would be pretty exciting. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, last weekend, actually the 31st of July, going into the weekend, I was sitting at my desk wondering what to write about, just brainstorming of some ideas of what to write about. And I, for some reason, thought that it was the perfect timing to address the CM Punk situation that has been just boiling inside of me for so long. And this situation is the fact that shortly after the Royal Rumble, earlier this year, CM Punk quit the WWE. He wasn't okay. He wasn't happy with the status. He never felt that he was going to be a top guy. There's many reports everywhere that Wrestling Depot is one of them. But the thing is, his contract just recently expired, so it's fitting that a CM Punk editorial is written because of that. So there's only got a few minutes left, and I really want to talk about CM Punk more extensively, so I think we might even take this to next week. But the bottom line is that when I wrote the article, I really wanted to express my editorialized view of the situation. Bottom line is this. CM Punk quit the company, period. He was dissatisfied. He quit. Now, next week I'm going to read some of the comments from the CM Punk marks that is absolutely, utterly ridiculous. Now, you have these CM Punk marks. Thankfully, you have a few. You can sift through for a long time, and you'll see a few of them that are logical. Granted, I got so many tweets. I got all weekend, literally, I kid you not, all weekend long, and as early as today, actually, I believe. Today, this morning, I got CM Punk. I haven't checked my Twitter. I probably got even some more on there now, but since the last time I checked it, which was during the show, and reading the tweets. So you have maybe one or two logical CM Punk fans that are saying, I disagree with the article, but I respect that you wrote it. Okay, you and I, CM Punk Mark, a Mark that does that and says that, we can get along. We can agree to disagree. But the ones that just are just ridiculous and making themselves look more like idiots, they try to troll me, a journalist. I've been a journalist for quite some time now. I've talked with people who've disagreed on my opinion pieces, which a lot of people don't understand this. They're called editorials, and they're a very big, strong point in garnering traffic and garnering interest in articles and websites. I mean, you make money by hits, and, of course, that gets advertisers. And a lot of people who make editorials, they get that type of attention than to say, well, you know, an editorial for a controversial topic usually trumps just a regular news feed or regular news article of something like Yoshitatsu's wrestling in Japan right now. So that's the bottom line with that. You have your CM Punk marks who say, Chris Featherstone's an idiot. Chris Featherstone is horrible. He's a terrible man. Now, you being such a CM Punk polemic, do you really think that CM Punk gives two craps about what you think about him, or you salivating over his every move, or you having an alarm for his every tweet that he makes? The guy doesn't know you, and he doesn't care about you. It's my job. I get paid to write about my thoughts. You don't get paid to write idiotic comments on the Bleacher Report comment threads and expect someone to really care. I could ignore all of them, but because I like the interaction to communicate with people, I actually respond to a lot of them. There's some that's just so idiotic that I just de-troll is what I call it. When someone troll and I troll back, I call it de-trolling. When I own a troll, but at the same time, I mean, I could care less about your ridiculous CM Punk comments. I think a lot of them are funny, to be honest with you. But we'll talk about more of this next week. There's so much more to talk about. Part two of me addressing the CM Punk article. I'm gonna read some comments, and I'm also going to read some good comments as well. I'm gonna address some comments next week, and I'm going to really dig deep into this CM Punk thing. So stay tuned next week as we finish up addressing the CM Punk. I knew that was going to take more than 1 week because there's so much in there. So continue to join the revolution, the Facebook revolution. We got so many followers. We got so many followers on Twitter because of it too. So thank you all. Of course, tweet at Crave Wrestling, WrestlingInc.com, WeAreWrestling.net, WhatCulture.com, Bleacher Report, and until next week, thank you so much for listening, and we'll have some fun talking about some SummerSlam positions. Have fun. Enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. And Daddy loves Elijah. Goodbye.